This episode of the Heavenly Spectrum is brought to you by the Book of Esther. Esther, the only book of the Bible to not mention God by name. Also not mentioned by name in the Book of Esther is Captain Jack Sparrow. Now that would have been a prophecy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Heavenly Spectrum, a lighthearted discussion of God and His universe that covers the heavy and the light, the serious and the ridiculous. Here's the part I added. We are not ultimate authorities! That honor belongs to Yahweh. We're just folks that love him and his good news of great joy, so we're going to talk about it. I'm your host, Stephen Simmons. Joining me today is my brother Jacob.
Hello again.
Of whom you are well acquainted. Well, and we have a returning guest, Nicole. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're back.
I'm back.
Welcome. Since Nicole was here, we fixed the planet.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
All it
took was one episode about the environment, and now it's all we did it.
I was wondering what we were supposed to think we fixed. I forgot that she did that episode.
Yeah. No, not like peace. All the trees are green.
I did see this morning on Facebook or maybe Instagram, like photos of like grass and stuff sprouting again for the first time in the light of like California and Australian wildfires.
Aww.
It was very moving.
Our show did that.
Yeah, that was our show.
You saved enough turtles with straws.
Yeah.
No more straws. All straws are in jail now, and all the turtles are big.
Federal or like county prison?
I don't know.
Okay.
Hey, what's the scuttlebutt? What's the news on the street, Jacob?
What's the scuttlebutt?
Dude, what are your little birds whispering in your ears, Lord Varys?
Wow, what an excellent transition. I want to talk about something that I have seen on the Netflix that I find very disturbing, and it turns out...
The Netflix.
Did you guys know that millennials and Gen Z are embracing outright paganism and witchcraft at an increasing rates compared to other generations?
What? Yes.
No way.
Nicole tell knows.
Me
we don't even talk about it. Okay, so I watched season one and it was a little weird.
Of what? Wait.
We're going to get there.
Oh.
But I was like, whatever, I'm kind of into it. And then I watched season two and it was like, no, this is crazy. Have you guys seen The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
No.
Did you ever watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch as a child?
Oh, you know Susan wouldn't let me watch that.
So basically Netflix has redone this. It's an old comic book called The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And Sabrina on ABC Family was very family friendly. She was like a nice girl living with her aunts. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is explicitly satanic pagan worship witchcraft.
Good.
On this Netflix TV show. They worship Satan. They call him the Dark Lord. They refer to Christians as supporting the lesser god or something like that.
Huh.
It's like outright pagan in season two.
And is this a comedy show?
No, this is like a dark drama. It's almost a dark like a drama. CW drama just done by Netflix.
Oh,
I think
dear.
It's the same people that do Riverdale, which is on the CW. But basically, I was really interested in the fact that nobody's really batting an eye at how dark and... Like in season two, they summon Satan or whatever and they try to kill him. But he ends up coming back and Sabrina becomes the queen of hell at the end. Like, it's wild that nobody is weirded out by this anymore. And I was like, what is going on in society?
Uh-uh.
And it turns out that millennials and Gen Z people, recently I heard called Zoomers.
Zooming
isn't that
down
silly?
Into the pits of hell.
The article that I read in response to praising The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina said that New Age beliefs are common amongst Gen Z and millennials. In particular, about 66% of both religious and non-religious people in those two demographics, Gen Z millennials, believe in at least one kind of New Age spirituality belief, meaning psychics or that physical objects have energy and life forces or astrology or any of these things. But about 2/3 of both religious and non-religious millennials and Gen Z people hold to at least affirming one New Age spiritual practice.
2/3 or 66.6.
Dang.
Oh.
Dang, in a pouch. So.
I just want to know what your thoughts.
They're worshiping the witch show on the Netflix now.
Well, people are watching it and not being weirded out by it,
not
which is weird to
realizing.
Me. It's got a girl named, maybe I'm mixing her name up actually. She's just very blonde. Like
Meryl Streep.
It's Meryl Streep as Sabrina.
Cool. The de-aging is phenomenal.
But in general, I think.
I was
the most interested in the article that I read that said that even people that identify as Christian, it's non-discriminatory between religious and non-religious. The numbers stay the same, that about 2/3 of the polling demographic affirm some New Age practice.
We're playing in the little kiddie pool of media, and what sort of media do we dive into? And what's the line that says I'm going to go over here and watch Game of Thrones, but I'm certainly not going to watch Sabrina show?
Because
Game of Thrones plays around with God like he ain't no thang, or at least that he's among a pantheon.
I've never seen Game of Thrones. What? How do they treat God?
Well, so like, there's this Lord of Light character that's very Jesus-ish. And then, yeah. Well, Nicole may have alternative thoughts, but
as close to Jesus close to in Jesus. That show.
Yes.
Very not.
And then you have what, this Light of the Seven. There's like the seven, yeah, there's seven gods. Different people have their different religions, and it's kind of like Skyrim-ish, where it's like they're kind of real, and yeah. They're all working in some ways. But there's certainly an academic way to look at a show about, you know, witches and spookies and stuff, and see the brokenness there. I think if you're just blindly watching it as just like some more entertainment, and you're not realizing how disrespectful and destructive that kind of worldview is, then that's kind of dangerous, because it's indoctrinating. If you're not like thinking about the fact of like, oh no, this lesser god they keep talking about is God.
I think what's concerning with a show like that is that you're taking the background with the previous show of it being a bit more innocent. Maybe, I don't know what lines it might have crossed or whatever. But now you've gone really. Yeah, you have the name recognition. You're drawing people in, and now you're exposing them to something that is like very explicitly for us as Christians wrong.
Right.
And so I think that's what's tricky. But there's a part of me that's also like, I kind of appreciate it when things are black and white of like, if you just call it what it is, yes, it is about paganism, witchcraft, all that. Like, it is wrong. But the fact that you're kind of tricking people from the previous show. And then another thing, we are living in the South.
Yeah, that's true.
When I think of my brother who's been in Seattle for quite a while and like hear about stuff that he goes through, or when he's been in different small groups of people and they talk about their past and like how they've been affected by witchcraft, Satanism, lots of other things that are so shocking to us here because of the bubble that we're in.
Right.
It is so normal there. And it is just a matter of time before that becomes normal here.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So me and my good friend Steven here are probably weird fanboys of the Bible Project. Tim Mackey, let us know when you want to be on the podcast.
Get over here.
One of my favorite things that they've done in the past couple of years is the Elohim series.
Mm-hmm.
They just talked about the idea of spiritual beings in the Bible and what that word means and all the different ways that that word is used, because it's used, you know, we talk about Elohim when we're talking about God, literally Yahweh, but also we mean it to talk about like spirits of dead people. Like,
right.
You know, like the spirit of Samuel, right? Was an Elohim in the Bible. But anyways, what the series really reminded me of whenever we're listening to it was just the idea that like people that read and believe the Bible are not supposed to enter into reading the Bible with the presupposition that spiritual things don't exist.
Yeah.
But the idea that they do exist, they're very serious. We shouldn't just discount them. But the fact that Jesus is better and has called us into a better way to live. So I guess like with the rise of the occult, we're naive as Americans, not even as Christians, but it's naive for anybody to think that these things have no power other than entertainment. You know,
as they say, you're always getting preached to. It's just what room you're in. That's when the preaching's happening.
Go on.
So is you in a Sunday class when the preaching's happening?
Yeah.
Or are you on your couch watching the Netflix?
Watching the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the Queen of Hell.
Right. Most media out there is grounded in the worldview of like, at the end of the day, this whole God thing is very silly. Let's not take it seriously.
Yeah.
And so the more time you spend around that worldview,
yeah,
if your worldview of, no, actually God is the main daddy-o here and he's in control of all things, if that's just 1 hour on a Sunday, and then, oh, I'm back from church, let's binge some Sabrina, you're getting a lot more of the other sermon than you're getting of the one that matters.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bonkers show.
It's kooky. It's wild.
So this is being recorded on a Monday. It is the 3rd of February. It is just after the biggest game on earth.
Oh.
And so...
I was about to give you the time. It's just after 5 p.m.
All right, thank you. The question that we have connects to the wonderful world of which we all love, known as sports.
Oh, no.
You don't know me at all.
Scott wants to know, who would be Jesus' favorite sports teams? Here's my question to you specifically. How many sports teams do you know?
Oh, dear.
Because I can think of the Patriots.
Is this only football?
Any sport team.
I know a lot of hockey teams.
What's your favorite hockey? No, what's not your favorite? What's Jesus' favorite hockey team? If Jesus went down to the rink and you wanted to watch the Icemen.
Which
let me pull up the standings.
I just want to be very clear before we proceed that none of the people talking about this are sports fans in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, please.
Which sport has the team that is the literal Angels? There are the Angels, right?
They're in the outfield.
Well, that's the movie, but is the Angels a real team somewhere?
The Angels are the team of the sport of the great spiritual war, and they're looking out for us at all times.
I'm literally Googling this right now.
Literally Googling this.
The Angels was a rock? band.
Well, I was going to say Patriots because of how patriotic they are, but I don't think Jesus would want them to be deflating footballs. Zing. That happened one
Jesus
time.
Jesus would definitely not be a fan of the New Jersey Devils.
No. Mm-mm. Doesn't sound like it. They're going to be in the pit where the gnashing happens.
They're the LA Angels. I just looked it up.
LA Angels.
But aren't there...
What sport is that?
Baseball. Okay. Isn't there more than one Angels in the whatever kind of movie, or is it just Angels in the Outfield?
I have never seen that movie, so I don't know.
Oh. It's literally the Angels are helping
Jesus would totally be with the LA Kings.
LA Kings.
Ooh, got him.
He's the king of kings. He'd be the coach of the kings.
Yeah.
You think all the Sabrina pagan worshippers would be with the Washington Wizards? That's basketball, though. Isn't that the Washington Wizards?
Could be. I'll accept anything
we
you
don't.
Say.
None of us know
this
anything.
Is great.
This is what I thought it'd be fun to talk about, is because how oblivious we are to this world. The ones that played last night, what were they called?
The 49ers and the Chiefs?
Yes.
Thank you, because I did not know.
In which circle of hell do you think the Monstars would be?
Dude, honestly, probably not.
They mistreated Michael Jordan.
Yeah, but they were so witty.
That's true.
Wait, who's that?
You never saw Space Jam?
Okay, that is opening up a whole other can of worms. Okay.
I read online recently, and I don't know why. This is so relevant. I'm so sorry. Space Jam only existed because I think for a Super Bowl, they had a commercial with like Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan, and the commercial did so well that they decided to make a movie out of it.
That's nuts.
Isn't that crazy?
I wasn't alive then.
1996
so that's
when it came out.
Seriously. Yeah, they didn't ask me for my opinion.
Interesting.
They rescheduled the 1984 presidential inauguration because it conflicted with the Super Bowl.
Really?
Rather than reschedule the Super Bowl, they rescheduled the swearing in of our nation's leader.
What do you think that says about Jesus' favorite sports team?
That his favorite team.
What is his favorite sport, though?
His favorite sport would have to be lacrosse, because you're flinging stones like David.
Oh, not because it has the word cross in it.
Oh, that makes more sense, doesn't
what
it?
What do you think Jesus would have been good at athletically?
All of them.
Water skiing?
We've done this, haven't we? This has got to be
have
a question.
Have we done the sports thing?
Let's swing back into this question, just in case someone wants to send that question in.
But I can't answer it, Steven.
No one wants to say this. Clemson?
Why?
What?
Because Dabo won't close his mouth about Jesus?
Dang, amen. And Trevor Lawrence, Christian things?
What if they're both just sacrificing lambs when no one's looking? It's all a front.
What is going on?
I don't know if it is or not. There's no way to know.
I was actually thinking legitimately that Jesus would probably be a hockey player because skating on ice is a lot like walking on water.
Oh. I am for this.
Okay, Jesus the hockey player.
Now ask me a single hockey team.
LA Kings. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So Nicole said it way hours ago.
Yeah.
And we should have just stopped
Aren't
there.
The Penguins a hockey team?
They sure are.
Jesus likes the Penguins because he made the Penguins literally, and they're hockey, so they're walking on water.
That is airtight logic.
That's airtight.
All right, y'all. This question comes to us from Brian. How does being in community help your relationship with God and also hurt it? That's from Brian. Brian also includes a suggestion. Less Star Wars, more Jesus. I know this is hard, but if I wanted to listen to Star Wars stuff, I would listen to a Star Wars podcast. That's okay. May the Force be with you, Brian.
Sorry to our Patreon, Sarah, whose Star Wars-related content is being roasted by other listener Brian.
We can't have this much strife in our community.
Dang.
And on that note, how does being in community help your relationship with God and also hurt it?
I'd like to tee it off to our friend Nicole.
Oh.
Hey.
Hey.
Well, what do you do?
How do you define community? I think that's a great starting point.
Great.
Verb. What's the verb? Go forth and community.
Okay.
All right, let's just do the noun.
Yeah, let's do the real one, you mean?
I would say a body of believers around you that you're regularly in life with that ideally are, as like Acts would outline, breaking bread together, we're going to quote-unquote temple together, we're worshiping God together and learning about him together and growing in relationship with him together.
Yeah, I would say my primary community would be the people that I'm most committed to being with regularly, the most committed to talking about what we're learning about Jesus with, the people that I'm most dedicated to being missional with, but also that community expands to our greater church family, because my small group is one of 9 or 10 other small groups, and we're also a part of communities like neighborhoods and towns. And but I think for the sake of the question, biblical community, church community.
But even with our context, I feel like our community still looks really radical compared to other churches, or at least for me, how I grew up.
Yeah.
It is a very, very different thing.
Yeah.
And it has been such a beautiful, beneficial thing for me rather than the communities.
Right.
Or lack of that I've had growing up.
Yeah.
The three of us are a part of a church that focuses heavily on community. Being a Jesus-centered family on mission would be the tagline.
Yeah.
So community is a major priority that is put forth in our particular setting.
Yeah, even, I remember when I was in college, I went to a small private school. Whenever people always ask, like, what's your favorite thing about going to school here? We always said the community. And obviously, when I was there in that season, I wasn't lying. I thought the community is really impressive, but it just meant that we really loved being around one another. We felt really cared for by most of the people around us. We felt really encouraged to learn and to grow and stuff. But then, like, to kind of move from that season into the season we're all in now of, like, young professionals, community takes on such a more specific look than what it did then. You know what I mean? Yeah. Community is just, like, this atmosphere, this buzzword. Mm-hmm. But now community is people that I confess sin to and people that rebuke me and people that love Jesus as much or more than I do and are encouraging me to do the same. People doing the hard parts of life together. And
from what you're saying, like, it being so nebulous when you were in school and, like, having it in the context of a church where the vision of community is communicated to us, it's helpful to see, like, oh, this is the place where we practice the one another's that the Bible commands us to do. And outside of that, how would I forgive people and love others as a church? You know, we're the bride and we're constantly being sanctified and we need other people around us to do that.
Yeah. What about the actual question itself, which is why do we need,
how does it help and harm our relationship with God?
Huh. Interesting. It's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah. What I have to be aware of is, am I treating my community like a body believers or just a friend group that we have the common interest of Jesus?
Right.
We can talk about Jesus a lot as friends, but my priority is more keeping my friendships than actually making or encouraging my friends to be more like Jesus, pushing my friends towards relationship with Jesus and modeling Jesus more. And so we're more willing to talk with each other about the sins that we have in our lives or talk to each other about where things are hard. But where it can be harmful is when we are unwilling to actually push that friend who we are in community with towards Jesus and be like, hey, here's a place where repentance needs to be a thing. Our small groups at our church are called life groups. I've been in a life group setting where it feels like we're more just kind of at a therapy. Let's vent about our life. And everyone's just going to kind of give self-help advice to each other. And there's a period where our life group had to have a conversation about, like, it's been a few months and there has not been a Bible open at this meeting.
Oh, wow.
You know, we have just kind of talked about our lives a lot.
So much emotional and, like, detox there.
Yeah. But, like, scripture is not present. It's just like we're being really good friends with each other. But then are we being really good brothers and sisters in Christ with each other? And are we being really good fellow disciples with each other?
And that is a way that community is helpful of, you know, Jesus is our comforter and his spirit works in us to give comfort to people, just being there with them, whatever that might look like. But there's also the flip side of that. Like you were saying, like, we need to have our Bibles open. We need to be studying the word together and being encouraged and being corrected. We need to be discipling one another and creating more disciples. Like, it goes more than just the comforting one another and doing life together, which I love that phrase, but also needs to be more intentionally redeemed of doing life together is more than just sitting around having a good time because we all love Jesus.
I think it's important too to kind of, I know because we all so value our Christian community, it's easy to think that we are the only people actually perceiving beneficial community.
Yeah.
We would just be naive to think that other people are totally lacking community because they're not Christians.
Well, you know, there's actually a Super Bowl ad that points to that idea.
Oh, yeah?
Actually, it was a compilation of Facebook groups. I don't know if either of y'all saw this, but it was literally...
I was, like, playing Face 10.
There's just this upbeat music playing, and you would just see a group of people, and it would say, like, the title of what their Facebook group is, and it was always around a specific interest, very niche, like the boulder lifting Facebook group. And it was all these, like, strong men and women, like, lifting boulder. And it was literally, like, a montage of communities, and they all looked like they were all rallied around a unifying idea that they loved and they cared about. And that's where, again, it gets to the point of, like, we can all just have in common that we think Jesus is really cool and we think the Bible is true. But at what point are we really leaning into how Scripture has laid out what community should look like as brothers and sisters. Is it just like, oh, you think Jesus is cool? Me too. Great. Let's sit on the couch and watch Sabrina and not actually have a quality conversation. Gosh. You know, like, I mean, that's literally why this podcast exists, is because I want to have conversations about Jesus. I don't want to just talk about whatever else other thing. Are we having conversations that are leaning towards the sanctification of this family and of this body?
I remember one time I was listening to a presentation by a woman named Rosaria Butterfield, and she's a formerly lesbian, queer theory literature professor that became a Christian in the past couple of decades and now is married to a pastor and has a bunch of adopted kids and stuff. But she was talking about the lessons that she learned from the queer community before she became a Christian. Now, it's certainly in a secular mindset, but the absolute success that the gay community has on community and hospitality, and how the lessons that she learned about being in the gay community really kind of helped her piece together what the Bible actually says about it. When I was thinking about community, I was thinking about, first of all, I think the question was, what's the benefit of it, or what's
how it can be beneficial or harmful in your relationship with God?
Beneficial.
How it can be benefiber in your relationship with God.
It's beneficial to us primarily, in my opinion, because when we practice community, we are practicing obedience.
Yeah.
The phrase of one anotherness, you know, one another in the Bible is there over 100 or at 100 times. 94 of those are just in the New Testament, and 47 of those are specifically one another commands given to people that follow Jesus. So if we want to obey the Bible and doing those one another things, we have to do in the context of community. Sanctification happens in iron sharpening iron. You can't, iron cannot sharpen itself. We've been gifted, it's a blessing to be in the body of believers that are all bound by the commonness of being redeemed in Jesus.
Our God is a community. The Trinity is a community. You know? We are modeled after a God, that we are made in the image of a God who is a community. I want to focus on the image part, because I think that a way that community can be harmful in our relationship with God is when we take the way that people in our community treat us and we apply those attributes to God. So if we're harmed by our community, we say God is like this person. Or if a friend betrays me, or if a friend is talking about me behind my back or whatever, then it's like, well, if my friends don't care about me, then how could God care about me? And we can sinfully and incorrectly take the ways that people are living in ways that are harmful, and then turn those defects in their character as defects in God's character.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, just false. And then the flip side, the beauty is that the idea that God is loving and God cares and God is there with you, it can be hard to wrap your brain around, because God is an intangible force. And then that's why we have community, to be that sort of the tangible, the hands and feet of God, of like my friends rallying around me in hard times is that physical representation of the way that we love you now reflects and is an imperfect form of how God loves us. So that's how it can be beautiful, is the way that our community treats us can either model God really beautifully or taint our view of God and how he relates to us.
Yeah.
As image bearers, I think we have more power than we realize in how some of the deepest wounds that we have in our lives are just how people interacted with us poorly, not even what people physically did to us. It's often how people treated us.
Yeah.
How community was fractured, those leave the deepest scars.
We've been talking about with some of our students at church, Satan's tactics to trip up believers, and that, you know, we've been talking about how Satan's primary tool is manipulation and deception and lying. Mm-hmm. When I think about the most benefit the community has on one another is that we kind of act as lie detector tests for one another. Because when I'm being deceived, I don't know it. I mean, we're complicit in our own rebellion, but deception is not necessarily a conscious decision.
Sure.
I'm going to be deceived now. Like, the point of deception is that it's deceiving. I'm being tricked into believing something that actually isn't true, but I believe it is.
Sure.
So community is kind of a lie detector test of people that I know love Jesus and love me, looking to say, hey, you're not seeing this in the right way, or you're not doing this in the right way. Not in a legalistic way, but just you're sinning. This is sinful and you don't even recognize it. And being able to point me back to the truth.
Maybe kind of obvious response, but community, like any good thing, can become an idol.
Yeah.
Like, community idolatry is a very real thing. The people in my life that are very good gifts from God can become God in my brain. Of like, I'm no longer talking to God because I talked to Jacob about it. Why do I need to go pray?
You know, that's right.
I think it could lead to a lot of self-reliance at the same time, or group reliance.
Yeah, group thing.
Jesus traveled with 12 disciples and regularly went away to go and talk to God. You know, there's that balance of community and solitude.
Yeah.
Proverbs talks a lot about like wisdom and seeking counsel from multiple people.
Yeah.
But we also have God's spirit living in us, and there needs to be both. And
God has gifted us with community. He's good in and of himself inherently, sufficient in and of himself. And because he's so good inherently and so sufficient, he has provided us with a means to kind of see and feel. And
I think it's Paul Tripp that said self-examination is a community project.
Yeah.
Like the idea of like we better understand our own motivations.
Uh-huh.
Our community is able to help shine light on our blind spots because God will use people in our lives to help us see things that...
I think that's super helpful too. Like in the age of individual, expressive individualism that we live in, where everybody's on such an inward journey to learn myself and to know myself and to figure out my... Yeah, but like what Christ offers us is come be a part of us, you know, and in being a part of us, you will know yourself more because that's what God is doing in you. He's showing yourself to your, I don't know, that's a weird way to say it. But like, you know, God is showing you what you really are.
Right.
Your sinfulness and the parts of himself that he's gifted you with.
Sure.
Through the context of one anotherness, togetherness. And
right. Pretty baller, y'all.
Wow. Every sacred moment there is just pretty baller.
In a world where it was time for the third question, Stephen read it.
Our third question comes from Austin. And it's a little bit of a thought experiment. So let's get our artistic brains a-churning here for this thought experiment. I think I'm making it sound too abstract. It's actually pretty straightforward. Okay. The question is...
What's your favorite color?
Stop. Did Jesus know about certain foods that we enjoy today that people did not have the luxury of eating while he walked the earth?
Like pizza?
Maybe.
It's funny to think...
Did Jesus
pizza is luxury.
But luxury item. Mellow mushroom.
Recently, every time I've gone to the gas station, which
are you talking about luxury food?
I know, it's gonna connect. Promise. What's the gas station that does the little like 20-second TV blur? Is it Circle K? They like have TV screens at their pump. But I've been seeing the same commercial all over town at every Circle K I go to, and it reminds us that refrigeration is a luxury. And that hundreds of years ago, only the rich and powerful emperors would have had access to like rocket pop icicle, like, you know, those like little frozen things. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm just waiting for Circle K to reconnect to Jesus.
It's just, I'm thinking about luxury food now, and I'm thinking of rocket pops from the Circle K.
Well, now
K
I'm
commercial.
Thinking of like gas station hot dogs.
And luxury food, yes.
Again, from their stand, you know, a lot that we would not even
from my perspective, the Jedi are evil.
Well, then you are lost. Sorry, we don't want to make Brian mad.
I think the easy answer, and we don't need to just end on this, is yes.
When have we ever just ended on yes?
We could try today.
Okay. Well, folks, that's... So Jesus is the omnipotent outside of God. Outside of God.
Oops.
Backing up. Outside of time, God, and also fully man.
Yeah.
So are we thinking that Jesus is chewing on some of those loaves of bread, and it's like, I'm going to refrigerate and think about, darn it, because refrigerators weren't here yet.
Well, I guess it kind of depends on your interpretation of...
Nicole's shaking her head.
Right ahead, please.
Well, I'm saying God provided everything he needed. He didn't need refrigeration.
And his bread was to do the will of his father.
Yeah, he was content and complete and satisfied with what he had. He didn't have to save it for later. Or if he wanted to, he could make more.
Do you think that if he ever went into solitude, he just pulled a Hot Pocket out of the ground and ate it?
Oh my gosh, Jesus is like hiding Little Debbie.
Yeah, like that's what all the solitude was for, was just going and eating.
Oh my gosh.
Just like always has one pizza roll in his pocket.
Yeah. Jeez, what was that? Nothing.
Well, it can't be like Napoleon Dynamite where he has tater tots because Jesus didn't have zipper pockets.
Peter karate kicks Jesus' cargo pants and ruins all his tots.
Do you think that in Philippians 2, whenever it's talking about Jesus emptying himself and putting on human form, that includes forgetting the knowledge of all things future?
Two things can be true. One of the greatest creations on this earth is zebra cakes. And zebra cakes are not necessary for my eternal salvation. Huh. So, with those two things
This is
in
like
mind,
a philosophy proof you're setting up or something.
Jesus probably lived a perfectly fruitful life having never known about zebra cakes.
You used the word probably just then.
I have never had zebra cakes.
We were very obese children in my household growing up, so we are very familiar with a full array of Little Debbie snack cakes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So if Jesus was eating them like me, then he was sinning. So probably not the same way we were eating them.
Food idolatry.
I wonder if Jesus' mom made really good food. Oh, you know, maybe. Like the same way that it's like, I love crepes, but my mom makes the best crepes and I'm not even going to try to make them because it's like.
So do you think that Mary put down a big tray of yummy cookies and Jesus
Mary,
said,
did you know?
Oh, gosh.
That was the sound of a high five.
Your ring.
Sorry.
Jesus looks at the cookies and he's like, Mom, you're no Keebler elf. And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like.
Was there like some axiom that was like the best thing since sliced bread, but he would say it in the future tense?
This is the best thing until sliced bread.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they didn't have it yet, and that's luxury food.
This is the best thing until Mountain Dew Zero Sugar with Bryan Cranston.
Just you wait. There'll be this really weird ad on the Super Bowl.
The what?
What's an ad? Never mind.
Right.
Anyways.
That would be kind of funny. I mean, there's no way to like even remotely prove it, but if like Jesus like accidentally let up.
What if when John's talking about all the stories he doesn't have time to include, it was every time Jesus brought up something and no one knew what he was
talking
about?
Something from the future.
It's like, I'm not going to include this part.
Gosh, those would have been way faster in a Tesla. What? Nothing. Just keep walking.
And the disciples couldn't even wrap their heads around him being the Messiah. So it's kind of the same thing.
Dopes.
Those dullards.
Well, we did that.
Yeah, I guess so. Folks, that's our show. If you have any questions, serious or ridiculous, that you'd like discussed, send us an email.
Please.
At theheavenlyspectrum@gmail.com. If you'd like to join our support team of five beautiful souls, which Nicole is one.
Oh, that's not why she's on. We just like her. She didn't buy her way in.
Of course not.
Like Drake on the Slytherin Quidditch
team. Originally.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You did show me my social security number and a picture of my mom in a closet. Anyways, head over to patreon.com/theheavenlyspectrum to join our support team financially if you so desire. And as always, be sure to share the show with friends and family and leave us a glowing review on iTunes so we can achieve our goal of being the one podcast to rule them all. Special thanks to Haley Williams, No Not the Paramore Haley Williams, my friend Haley Williams, for the artwork for this podcast. Thanks to Maddie Mullen for the music. And also with your spirit, Jacob.
Thanks.
And also with your spirit, Nicole.
Well, how do I respond?
That was it.
That's likewise.
Say absolutely.
Absolutely.
Whoa. Bye.
Goodbye.